The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
And Canadian Milk, only three finalists were chosen for each category and were judged on flavor, texture, body, color, appearance, and salt content. Therefore, be it resolved, all members of the House of Assembly congratulate Maja and Willem van den Hoek as successful small business entrepreneurs for their high quality and uniqueness of their cheeses, for being named as finalists in the Canadian Cheese Grand Prix, and for promoting Nova Scotia as a place where fine cheeses are made. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 12:48. We will finish at 1:48. I'll recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the NDP government stooped to an all-time low. Former residents of the Home for Colour Children have come together. They provided painstaking evidence in their affidavits, evidence that was personal, hurtful, and painful. Evidence that for many was locked away in a bank of horror memories for many, many years, only to come out now so that we could get to the bottom and find the truth. And what does this NDP government do? The NDP government that wants people to believe it is kind, compassionate, and stands for social justice, Mr. Speaker, it sends in the troops to wipe out that evidence. So my question to the Premier, could the Premier tell us why he is so afraid of the truth?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, nothing in the world could be further than from the truth. The applications made yesterday before the Supreme Court were routine. They are a routine matter. The reality is that we are, in fact, engaging in a process where we're putting together a panel to look at all of the circumstances surrounding the events around the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. We want to look at, what the social mores of the day were, how the people there were treated. We want to ensure that the stories of those people are heard, that the process is open, transparent, is honest. It is a much different matter than the question of compensation. That's a different matter altogether. The Supreme Court has its own set of rules that it applies. It looks at evidentiary questions, all those things. They have nothing to do with the question of how we get to a complete story. In fact, before the courts, much of the things that those people would want to say would not be relevant to the case. Much of the evidence would not be relevant. We think it is important that the examination of this issue be far broader, that in fact it actually look at the questions associated with social justice, that it actually look at the questions associated with fairness.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's a sad day when the Premier of the province of Nova Scotia says it's routine to send lawyers in to try to discredit victims, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday the government, in a rare legal move, sent in a bank of lawyers to wipe out this evidence. They sent them in to wipe out those memories. They sent them in to, once again, to try to discredit the victims. So my question to the Premier, could the Premier tell us whether it was his office or the Minister of Justice's office who ordered the actions of government lawyers yesterday?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I already pointed out, these are routine applications. They happen all the time. The rules before the Supreme Court are they have control over their own process. It has nothing to do with the question of how we go about dealing with the question surrounding what happened at the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. They have to do with the question of compensation. Everyone, including the claimants, have the right to ensure that the examinations of those claims is full and complete based on appropriate evidentiary standards, because that's how we have confidence in the system that we have. On the other hand, we also have a process, which I have announced, which is designed to look at the larger questions associated with the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. The questions associated with social justice, the ones that my colleagues and I care very much about. We have no problem facing these issues, and we will do it with integrity, with honesty, and with and ensuring the transparency of the process.
Honourable, the Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there's nothing routine about this case, and for the Premier to suggest that this case is routine and the actions by his government are routine is shameful, Mr. Speaker. What went on in the courtroom yesterday on behalf of the NDP government was an embarrassment for all Nova Scotia. There are no words to describe the steps and the extent this government will go to try to discredit victims and hide the truth, Mr. Speaker. Does the Premier personally and morally agree with the shameful actions undertaken in the court of law by his NDP government yesterday?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I just think that to cast those kinds of aspersions on people is, it's very difficult to understand how the Leader of the Opposition could stand up and say those kinds of things. You know, the reality is, Mr. Speaker, you know, for years, the people of Africville asked for an apology and a recognition of what was going on with them, and there were Liberal governments that refused to do that. But this government took an active part in understanding and assuring that the recognition of the people of Africville was properly recognized. It was this government that looked at the injustice that went on with Viola Desmond and the Viola Desmond case, and it was this government that faced the reality of the past, of the difficult past of the province of Nova Scotia, and ensured that a pardon was granted. Mr. Speaker, we understand completely the anxiety, the pain of the people associated with the Nova Scotia Home for Colored Children. We are ensuring the integrity of the process. The justices of the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia are bound, or they have the jurisdiction to deal with these applications issues. I believe they will look at them fairly. As I said, the kinds of applications you saw yesterday were absolutely routine, and I'm confident that when, which we will do in the next little while, set out the terms of reference for the examination of this issue, that we will have a full, open, and transparent examination of what happened.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday a team of government lawyers was sent in to demand that the courts throw out all or portions of 13 affidavits filed by former residents of the Home for Colored Children in their attempt to be certified as a class to tell their story. This is an action that constitutional expert Dr. Wayne McKay called extreme, and that well-known law firm Wagner & Associates called unprecedented. Now, I ask the Premier, why is the Premier trying to silence the former residents on such an important matter in so extreme and unprecedented a way?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I read the comments, and I have to say I was at a loss to understand how they came to those conclusions, because I think most people understand these applications are made every day. They are made in class action suits. They're made in all kinds of suits, Mr. Speaker. But everybody in the community, even the lawyers on behalf of the victims, they're entitled to their opinion on that. What I believe is the important piece here is the fact that we have a government that has listened. We have a government that is putting together an examination of the very issues on the very terms that we were asked to examine. One that is aimed at reconciliation, one that is aimed to try and heal the community, one that is aimed at trying to get to the bottom of what actually occurred over those years.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier cannot claim to be listening when he sends a team of lawyers in to stop 13 affidavits from being allowed to be heard in court. Mr. Speaker, that is the opposite of listening. Now, the Premier talked about forming his independent panel to create a process for healing a month ago. He said, and I quote, "They," meaning the former residents, "wanted one a process of reconciliation and one of healing. It is really about the community wanting to have some recognition of the things that happened in the past. Yet now they are being silenced in court by their own government." I'll ask the Premier to explain why he says one thing in public and then sends his lawyers in to do the opposite in court.
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, all Nova Scotians, the victims included, have the right to expect that the process of law will be carried out forthrightly, honestly, without prejudice, that the applications of the rules will be exactly the same, regardless of who stands before them. In fact, Mr. Speaker, it's one of the fundamental principles of law that people have the right to stand before an independent adjudicator and to hear the case. Both sides have that right to expect that they will be treated fairly, openly, and honestly. In the courts, they have control over that process, and they arbitrate these questions. They arbitrate them every day, Mr. Speaker. We recognize that that is one process. The other process, Mr. Speaker, which we have announced, is the one that seeks an understanding of the social justice aspects of this case, that looks to lay bare the facts of history, one that looks to take the stories of the victims
2 minutes now
and the explanations of the other people who were associated with that institution at the time, and seeks to understand and address the effects that have happened, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure all members appreciate the lecture that they just received from the Premier, but the fact of the matter is that the former residents also deserve to have a government that doesn't treat their claims in such an extreme and unprecedented manner as has been described by constitutional experts like Wayne McKay. They deserve to be treated fairly. They deserve to be heard. They don't deserve to be faced with a crushing team of lawyers intent on stopping them from telling their stories. The opposite of what the Premier told them and told the people of Nova Scotia when they came forward just a short time ago. Now, that's the court process, Mr. Speaker. The Premier also has created a second process, an independent panel. And the former residents, through their group voices, as articulated by Tony Smith, say they don't have confidence in the independent panel. He said that on Maritime Morning just last week, that they don't have trust in the government's independent panel. So now they have a court procedure where the government sends in its lawyers to stop them from telling their stories. He has an independent panel that they say they have no trust in. That's what's going on, Mr. Speaker. So if truly those former residents are going to be silenced in court and they have no confidence in the independent panel that the Premier has created, will he at least call off his lawyers and let them tell them their stories in court and certify as a class so we can get on with the process of healing once and for all?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the court process is not about healing. It is about compensation, and it is about examining individual claims, and that means examining evidence. And you can't put evidence before the court and not expect that it's not going to be tested, that it is not going to be tested, because that is in fact the exact purpose of the courts. And that's why the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia looks at all of these applications as they should. They protect their own process. They protect the interests of the parties that stand before them. That is, you know, fundamental to our system of justice. As to the independent panel, I'm at a loss to understand how anybody could criticize a panel that hasn't been appointed yet, that could criticize terms of reference that don't yet exist. Mr. Speaker, we listened very directly to them. Mr. Smith wrote to me. He asked for exactly the kind of panel that we have struck, and we are doing our best to take what is a difficult thing, an artifact of history, and to look at it in the most transparent way. That is our commitment.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. You know, I think Nova Scotians pretty well know the Premier is tight with Nova Scotia Power and Emera. They know that he went full-bore endorsing the Maritime Link deal before he even knew what the deal was. Now, the Premier has signed agreements and deals to ensure the project and Emera's bottom line are secure without regard for the people of the province. And he's given guarantees to Emera that he will not negatively impact Emera with regulatory change, and I'll table his press release stating that. You know, Mr. Speaker, I have no doubt that the Premier sincerely believes that the Muskrat Falls deal is structured is the lowest and best cost for Nova Scotians. I sincerely believe that's what he thinks. But, Mr. Speaker, if the Utility and Review Board does say no to the Muskrat Falls deal, what is the Premier's plan?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, of course there is no other project out there. I mean, the Liberal Party and the Conservatives like to pretend that there is some other project that, you know, mysteriously would emerge. But there isn't. The reality is that the Maritime Link is a project which will provide the lowest, fairest rates for Nova Scotians. It will do so, and in addition to having the lowest and fairest rates, it will also usher in a new era for renewable energy in the province. Mr. Speaker, you might think that those are just my words, but in fact, if you check Hansard, those are actually the words of the member for King's West.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is about the deal itself, and the deal is currently structured. And Mr. Speaker, the Premier refused to answer that question, obviously. Nova Scotians want to know what his plan is. The Premier needs to make it clear what he will do if the board says no. And this has already happened in Newfoundland, where the board there determined it didn't have enough time to make an informed decision, and then the government legislated the project. The Premier here already guaranteed they wouldn't negatively impact the company through regulatory change. I believe that was through 2014. This government already committed to enacting regulations to require that ratepayers pay for the Port Hawkesbury biomass plant on the grid when the board said it was uneconomic for ratepayers. So it's not a stretch to think it could happen with this project. So, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask again. If the Utility and Review Board says no, does the Premier plan to legislate the project? Otherwise, what's his plan?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what I don't plan to do is speculate about a result from the Utility and Review Board. I expect them to do their job, and as the member for Dartmouth East would know, that you know, commentary and speculation by the Premier of the province is not the right way to conduct. We now have a project, one that is going to change the energy equation for Atlantic Canada for decades in front of us. It's going to provide us with the lowest, fairest, most stable rates, one that is going to create an economic engine for our region. We're confident that the UARB will deal with it appropriately.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think it's also fair that Nova Scotians would ask their Premier, what his plan is and where he will move forward if what exactly what happened in Newfoundland happens here. I think Nova Scotians deserve to have an answer to that question. You know, Mr. Speaker, critical to the board's work is the evidence before it. And yesterday I tabled all 14 studies that the Minister of Energy referenced the other day, and he had said, and I'll table Hansard here, he had said that 9 of the 14 presented evidence that was a positive event. In fact, that was not the case, and I'm sure he read those 14 studies. In fact, only one of them did. And I went through all the rest that showed what each one of them said. That is the only one of those studies that actually says that. Some of them don't even actually, in fairness, Mr. Speaker, some of them don't actually deal with cost at all. Some of them are on technical merits and so forth. But now, Mr. Speaker, would the Premier please list, other than the Dalton study, which of those 14 studies he says state that that project and this deal is the fairest and lowest cost long-term alternative? Because as far as we can tell, none of the 14 do, except Dalton's.
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, if he's read them, then he knows and he understands that the 9 of those 14 reports are supportive of the Maritime Link. He would understand that over and above that, almost everyone who has looked at this project outside of the Liberal caucus, outside of the Conservative caucus, understands that this will change the energy future of our region for generations to come. This has been compared to our CPR. This is what this will create an economic engine for the region. And I'm sorry that the Liberal Party is against it, because, you know, they started off jetting off to Newfoundland to promote this. They've spoken on it. They supported the bill, Mr. Speaker. And now, because they think it is politically convenient, they have changed their mind. I think that is a sad, sad commentary.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on a new question.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can assure the Premier that neither the leader of the official opposition when he went to Newfoundland or myself when I went to Newfoundland flew Amir Airways. So, you know, Mr. Speaker, the issue here is not about whether the project could have strategic values, but whether this deal, as structured, is good for ratepayers. And increasingly, it's appearing that it may not be. You know, the Premier has now taken to quoting former Federal Conservative Cabinet Ministers to justify the deal. And all I can say is I hope his Federal Conservative Party membership card is up to date, because, you know, Mr. Prentice will be very happy about that. You know, the Premier clearly believes the consumer advocate is wrong. He clearly believes the small business advocate is wrong. He believes the board's own consultants are wrong. And I guess the Premier knows better than all of those internationally respected experts in the energy field who've questioned the Premier's position. So, Mr. Speaker, if the Premier is so sure that all of the contrary evidence to this deal is wrong, why won't he allow whatever time the board decides is necessary so the Premier can be proved that he's right?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, This project has had more review, has had more conversation, has had more examination than any project that has ever come forward before the Utility and Review Board with respect to energy, Mr. Speaker. More studies, more work than any other. I realize that this is difficult because it is visionary. And that is something that the Liberal Party lacks. This is about delivering the lowest, stable, fairest rates to ratepayers. It is about building a piece of energy infrastructure that will serve the region for decades to come. It is about creating economic opportunity for the entire region, Mr. Speaker. This is the kind of commitment that we have in this caucus that is so sorely lacking in the Liberal caucus.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, the Premier looks at this stuff as black and white, you know, and it's an insult to Nova Scotians that he doesn't understand that people could say that there could be a strategic value in a project, but the deal as structured could still be a bad deal for ratepayers, and that's what the issue here is. You know, Mr. Speaker, we talk about strategic value, but that strategic value is linked to other markets. And when the Premier selectively quoted Mr. Prentice the other day, he forgot to mention, and I'll table Mr. Prentice's comments to the media, that in fact there needs to be changes to the regulations in the U.S. because many U.S. states won't count the project as green energy. This is despite the fact that the deal as currently structured assumes that the entire Lynx capacity between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. will be exported to the U.S. Mr. Speaker, it's an issue that's been raised by his favourite former Conservative cabinet minister and also by some evidence before the board. So, Mr. Speaker, has the Premier tried to address that issue with his U.S. counterparts?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, first of all, we don't see it as an issue because it doesn't actually affect the sale. But secondly, in fact, I know he was probably tied up, but I actually had all of my U.S. counterparts here last year, and this, in fact, was the focus of that discussion. And you know what they said? They said, let's get busy, let's see this project built, and let's start talking about the contracts that we can sign for this kind of power.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, maybe the Premier should check to see what some of those Premiers have done since leaving here, including recently signing a deal for a very high-capacity line into the U.S. that will bypass Muskrat Falls. Mr. Speaker, you know, the evidence before the board now points out that the Dalton and Nova Scotia power evidence ignored the impact on supply of the ComFit projects. It also ignored the impact, according to the evidence, of energy efficiency. And these are two things that, on the other hand, the Premier talks a lot about. Yet the study the Premier commissioned selectively ignores projects that would make the Maritime, so that it makes the Maritime Link project look better. You know, Mr. Speaker, during the last election, the Premier said that the conservation tax should be paid by Nova Scotia Power. And there's the letter from his chief of staff during the election. And here's from the Synapse report that we tabled yesterday, evidence before the board saying that that stuff was ignored. So, Mr. Speaker, why does the Premier, on one hand, promote energy conservation and ComFit programs, but turn around and endorse a study which makes the Muskrat Falls deal look better by ignoring ComFit projects and energy conservation?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I'm surprised that the member for Dartmouth East is able to talk out of so many sides of his mouth at one time, Mr. Speaker. Is that unparliamentary, Mr. Speaker? Because if it is,
any odor, any word that causes disruption or disorder is deemed by the chair to be unparliamentary. So, yes. Honourable the Premier.
I'll try to be a little less evocative of imagery, Mr. Speaker. The simple fact of the matter is, you know, the Liberal Party is against efficiency in Nova Scotia. They said they're going to close it down or they're going to take that away, Mr. Speaker. You know, they voted five times to take the HST off, against taking the HST off of home electricity, Mr. Speaker. The people of Nova Scotia know that the renewable electricity plan put forward by this government was not only the first one, but was widely praised as one of the most progressive plans anywhere in North America. The kinds of things that we have done with respect to renewable energy have been praised by the David Suzuki Foundation, Mr. Speaker. It is far and away the most rational, most progressive renewable energy and electrical plan in our country.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, when I presented the Premier with evidence of growing youth unemployment in our province, he accused me of cherry-picking the statistics, Mr. Speaker. So I want to take this opportunity to provide the Premier with more evidence of what we are talking about. The experience for young people in Nova Scotia's workforce from 2009 until 2012, according to Statistics Canada, has been very dismal, Mr. Speaker. For example, for young people aged 15 to 24 working in the retail trades, 2,400 full-time jobs have been lost in the 4 years from 2009 till 2012. If you're a young person working in a trade-related business, 2,500 full-time jobs have been lost for those young Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. If you're working in the category of business, building, and other support services, 1,300 jobs for young people have been lost, and I will table all of that from Stats Canada for the benefit of the Premier. So my question, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier is, how did he manage to spend $200 million on his Jobs Here scheme and lose so many jobs for young Nova Scotians at the same
Honourable time? Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is remarkable that the leader of the party who, when the projects company came from Alberta and said, we are going to bring people back from Alberta, we've been employing Maritimers and Nova Scotians in Alberta for years. But we are going to come back to Halifax and we're going to create 440 jobs that the leader of the Conservative Party criticized those people to such an extent that when I went out of this house with them, they literally turned to me and said, you know, we're trying to do a good thing for Nova Scotia and we just can't believe that somebody would say those kinds of things. It is a shame. Because those kinds of projects, whether it's RIM or IBM or projects or any of the other investments that we have made, is all about keeping young people here.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I really don't know what the Premier's talking about. I met with the projects team the same day, and we had a very good meeting. And yet the Premier seems to be offended. The only one that's offended, Mr. Speaker, is the Premier, who hands over bucket loads of taxpayers' money to move jobs from one end of Hollis Street in Halifax to the other. That was the public policy issue that we were debating that day, if he can't remember. That doesn't create a single job for a young Nova Scotian, Mr. Speaker. Statistics Canada also reports in that same report, Mr. Speaker, that the population of young Nova Scotians aged 15 to 24 dropped by 4,500 during the last 4 years. That's almost 4% of the total, Mr. Speaker. The labour force of young Nova Scotians dropped 3,900. That's almost 5% of the total young labour force. Employment opportunities declined by 3,600, or over 5% for people in that young age range, Mr. Speaker. That is the record of the NDP in the last 4 years. Mr. Speaker, young Nova Scotians are already voting with their feet when it comes to the record of this NDP government, and so I will ask the Premier, why are so many young Nova Scotians moving away or dropping out of the labour force under his watch?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, he always stands up, he says those things, table them, we check them, it turns out to be absolutely untrue. Mr. Speaker, I'll table Statistics Canada from 2008 through to 2012. It shows the population of Nova Scotia increasing from 937,000 to 948,700, Mr. Speaker. It is just the kind of nonsense that the leader of the Conservative Party enters into. The simple fact of the matter is he won't, even though for years, and even though the rebate program itself that we have was something that was used by Nova Scotia Business Inc. when they were in power, Mr. Speaker, we were able to go out and to actively attract new businesses to the province of Nova Scotia. The IBM Global Delivery Center, the first one in Canada, for a huge victory for young people, graduates who are going to be able to go to work in the Global Delivery Center. RIM. Cementing those jobs here in Nova Scotia. Projects, 440 engineering jobs for young graduates, Mr. Speaker. That is success.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the fact the Premier can count on one hand the examples he knows of jobs compared to the overwhelming evidence from Stats Canada that thousands of young people are without work today compared to 4 years ago actually proves the point. And Mr. Speaker, what is so unique about Nova Scotia that the labour force for young people is going down when it's going up everywhere else? We have the highest tax in the country, we have the highest power rates in the country. What more evidence does the Premier need that his policies are driving young people away and ruining their chance of starting their careers here?
Honorable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'll give him this. You know, it takes a lot of temerity to stand up and say those kinds of things. Simple fact of the matter is we inherited a colossal mess from the former government. It took years to try and fix it, Mr. Speaker. A huge deficit, Mr. Speaker, an economy that was faltering, Mr. Speaker, a slavish adherence to the worst kind of economic development initiatives, Mr. Speaker, and we changed all that. We turned a corner here in Nova Scotia, creating thousands of new jobs, Mr. Speaker. 11,000 jobs associated with the shipyard contract that is just starting to get underway, Mr. Speaker. We created cemented in place jobs in Port Hawkesbury, in a place where the leader of the Conservative Party would have given up on the industry and those workers.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Last night, CTV aired a panel of Atlantic Premiers discussing the Maritime Link, and the Premier stated that the rate Nova Scotians would be paying for power as a result of the Maritime Link deal would be 8 cents a kilowatt hour, and I will table that quote. Now, that's really interesting because, you know, if that's true, it would actually be really good news because we're paying over 13 cents now. And in fact, the Premier has been asked repeatedly in this House and couldn't give an amount. You know, it's also interesting because Amira says they won't know the rate until 2017. And I will table that. So it's impressive that the Premier knows the rate, but Amira doesn't. But, Mr. Speaker, since it would seem that the Premier has been given a guarantee by Amira that no one else has seen, would the Premier please table the written confirmation he has from Amira that the total blended electricity rate, as he put it, will be 8 cents a kilowatt hour once Muskrat Falls is online?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, just for the record, what I actually said was I saw what Amira predicted. They said the blended price for a kilowatt hour would be somewhere in the vicinity of 8 cents. That's what I actually said, as opposed to what he says I said. And secondly, Mr. Speaker, what is absolutely impressive is the fact that I stood here in this House, I said that during the address and reply, and somehow he missed it. But, Mr. Speaker, just for his edification, I will table this House the Chronicle Herald story. It may actually, it's a story, and it reads as follows. As an energy price, the $1.5 billion works out to 8 cents per kilowatt hour, Amira said. That's based on the 2017 energy price forecast and assumes that Nova Scotia Power is getting one-third of its electricity from Labrador and other imports, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I said exactly what the story out of Chronicle Herald. The Chronicle Herald says, it's not the first time I've said it. I've said it here in the House. I said it during the address in reply to the throne speech. I'm just surprised that took him so long to get that.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if the Premier said in the address and reply, I did miss that, and I apologize, but he's been asked repeatedly by the Leader of the Official Opposition in question period, and the Premier did not have an answer since then. So, and Mr. Speaker, Amira, and Mr. Speaker, Amira says there will be no rate known until, and they've actually said in their filings it'll be well over that. So, Mr. Speaker, is the Premier prepared to legislate that the total blended rate that Nova Scotians will pay as a result of the maritime deal will be 8 cents per kilowatt hour, and that any costs not covered by that will be covered by Nova Scotia Power shareholders?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it's a shame when the livelihoods of businesses in this area, the rates that people pay, become the subject of a football for the Liberal Party. You know, it is a shame because the process that's being undertaken, first of all, you have two Atlantic Canadian provinces actually three, including New Brunswick, acting in good faith, cooperating on a project together for the best interest of all of their citizens, one that is designed to try and create stable energy prices, that puts in place an energy infrastructure that will benefit us for decades to come. And it is a shame that the Liberal Party would ridicule that effort.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm surprised, he thinks it's a shame, but the fact of the matter is, if it's 8 cents, he gave a guarantee to Emira, then he should give a guarantee to ratepayers. It's as simple as that. And if he honestly believes, this Premier sat on CTV and told Nova Scotians that their power bill will be 8 cents a kilowatt hour, which is about 60% of what they're paying now. And so if he believes it, and if he's going to stand on CTV and say that, he should legislate it and stand by it. Otherwise, he shouldn't say it. So, Mr. Speaker, the Premier also said that he also went on to say in that interview that rates will then decline. So, Mr. Speaker, since the Premier knows the rates will be 8 cents once Muskrat Falls comes online, and that given Emira officially says that they won't know the rate until 2017, and I tabled that as part of their filing before the board, would he tell us, and Emira, exactly what the rate will be declining to?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the member for Dartmouth East thinks that people out there are naive, that they don't actually hear what he says, one question to the next, Mr. Speaker. Now, first of all, I just read exactly what I said, which is not what he says I said. That's the first thing. Second thing, I didn't say that last night or on CTV. In fact, what I pointed out was that they said that there would be under a 1% increase for the first 4 or 5 years, under 1%, and then the prices would decline. Mr. Speaker, that's what I said. That is what is being filed, Mr. Speaker. So, I realize that...
Order. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
I realize that from the Liberal Party's perspective, they don't really care about this. They consider this a politically convenient target for them to try and destroy. And that's a shame, because this is the best project. It is the lowest fairest rates when combined with our proposal, our policy to take the HST off, it means that it is of great benefit to the people of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the NDP have a habit of making life hard for small and medium-sized businesses. The procurement plan continues that trend. Contracts are now too big for local businesses to bid on. Money is leaving the province to large international corporations who have the ability to undercut local manufacturers. The manufacturing industry in Nova Scotia has been hit hard by the NDP economic failures, losing 1,600 from the labour force in the last 4 years. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, why does the minister continue to make life hard for job creators in rural Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to respond to that question. Is that what we are doing is quite the opposite. We are making life easier for SMEs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we've improved the web portal. We streamlined it with all the cluster and programs that we have available. Now SMEs can go into the web portal and go directly, more so now than ever before, to those programs that are going to be of great assistance to them, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in our in all the years that we've been in government, we lowered the small business tax rate. We've done it every year that we've been in government, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are doing the right things to help SMEs.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's obvious that the NDP don't understand how the Nova Scotia economy works. They cut the subsidy to the Yarmouth Ferry, which cost the province nearly three times the subsidy. That's a special kind of growth plan, Mr. Speaker. Save $5 million in subsidy, only to lose hundreds of jobs, millions from spending on visitors, and then spend millions propping up small and medium-sized businesses on the verge of closing due to the NDP's poor economic foresight and lack of research. The NDP don't understand the economy and would continue to cripple small and medium-sized businesses. So my question to the Minister is, unlike the Yarmouth Ferry economic disaster, has the NDP evaluated the potential loss to small and medium-sized businesses and the overall impact in Nova Scotia? Or have they simply taken a narrow, oversimplistic view again, throwing caution to the wind?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through this government, we have assisted approximately 400 businesses in the province of Nova Scotia. The majority of those businesses are SMEs. Off those businesses, that's through the PIP program, Mr. Speaker. Also through the PIP program, Mr. Speaker, what we've been able to do is we've been able to now 10,000 employees are more educated today than they were 3 years ago, Mr. Speaker. Those are the kind of investments that we are making into SMEs and business all throughout the province of Nova Scotia, from one end of the province to the other, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North on his final supplementary.
NDP don't care about small businesses. We can see that through their wind energy plan, which stacks the decks against the small business guys. Small and medium-sized businesses are the backbone of our province. They simply require that government get out of their way so they can create wealth. Mr. Speaker, the NDP have interfered, picked winners and losers, subsidized hand-picked industries, and sent rural Nova Scotia into a recession. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister, does the NDP not expect their procurement policy to end up like the wind plan, where only large companies can benefit, and continue to close their eyes when it comes to the small guys?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what small businesses have said to us, they need lower tax rates. What they've said, Mr. Speaker, is that they need more access to programs and services that we have, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what they've said to us is that they need a better educated workforce, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is obvious that this government has heard them because that's just exactly what we are doing.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister for Community Services has been touting her government's affordable housing strategy since her initial announcement in November of last year. Consultations have been held and research, I presume, has been done. My question is for the Minister, as of March 31st, 2013, what were the deferred maintenance costs and capital improvements needed in Nova Scotia's housing stock?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'm excited about the fact that we will be announcing a housing strategy to be able to show the people of Nova Scotia and work with the people of Nova Scotia for the first time in the history of this province that we have a plan, and it's a plan with the people of Nova Scotia. We have looked at what type of housing stock we have in the province, and this is, the Honourable Member does not understand what this housing strategy is about. It is not just about the number of housing stock, it is also about the people of Nova Scotia, those with disabilities, those who are looking towards more community options, seniors, how we can work with them in order they could stay in their home longer. Also, the plan is looking at how we can encourage young people to obtain their first home. So it's an overall very comprehensive plan. So she should stay tuned and educate herself a little bit better of what it's all about.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When asked in the House about numbers of families and seniors waiting to get into public housing, the Minister couldn't give an answer. And now, when asked about capital needs for housing stock, she can't give an answer. It's been 6 months, Mr. Speaker, and this simple information gathering to set targets. It's project management 101. Can the minister please give members of this House a timeline? When can we expect some housing built as a result of this strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Once again, as I said, the member opposite does not understand the workings of the housing strategy. We do identify what areas in the province that our stock needs some input and fixing. We've done, with the stimulus projects, we have focused on a numerous amount of homes that we have repaired and public housing. But this is much more than what she's thinking about. This is not about going out and just fixing up housing. What this is about is the whole concept of housing opportunities for Nova Scotians, whether that's through cooperative housing, whether that is supporting youth and their ability to purchase their first home, whether it is working with partnerships and municipalities and be able to build mixed community housing, whether it is working with the advocacy groups and focusing on how we move towards more cooperative and community living. It's very comprehensive. There's a lot of different areas, and that's what the member opposite needs to do a little bit more research and see exactly what the plan is.
The Honourable Member for Bedford... Oh, I'm sorry. No supplementary there. The Honourable Member for Argyle on a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister responsible for the Fisheries Loan Board. Last year, one of our prominent boat builders, Dixon's Marine Group, in the Minister's home community of Woods Harbour, was unfairly treated by the Loan Board when one of its customers was told by Loan Board staff that they were overpricing their vessels and that the fishermen should look elsewhere. This came as a complete surprise to the shipyard, as it strives to be competitive. As the minister knows, vessel selection is a very personal issue, and fishers want specific boats. This move by the Loan Board staff would be kind of like if one of us wanted to buy a car, wanted a Volkswagen Jetta, and was told that it would only fund a Honda Civic. My question to the minister, has there been a change in policy of the Loan Board in regards to who can build boats?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, to the member opposite. And first of all, we do not discuss personal files on the House of Assembly here. But I can tell you that the Loan Board, since I've been elected and since I took this position, when I entered politics in 2006, fishermen did not have access for capital for a loan for license. I ran on that campaign, and I can tell you right now that fishermen have access to capital for licenses, and it's been much improved, and I thank the member opposite for bringing that question to the floor.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what's even more interesting about this issue is that when Dixon's went to the Loan Board to find out what they were basing their pricing on, that they were told that the information doesn't exist. So my question to the minister, that apparently is doing such a great job, how does the Loan Board determine its pricing, and who makes that decision?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture.
Again, Mr. Speaker, to the member opposite, there is a process in place. There's inspectors that goes and inspects the boats in questions, and in particular case that we, and I'm very confident in the procedures that we have in place. And the member opposite from Argyle should know this because he was actually the minister at one time. And since 2006, when this minister, this member took this position, we have improved access for capital for fishermen, and the Loan Board has improved since then. Thank you again for the question.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his final supplementary.
There you go. Typically no answer here. Dixon's Shipyard, or Dixon's Group, tells me in the end the loan was capped. They capped the amount to lend to the fishers, causing those fishermen to dig even deeper into their pockets to the tune of almost $32,000 in both cases. There was two cases of this one. So when the industry is hurting, prices are at an all-time low, the rural economy is in recession, Mr. Speaker, the government stuck it to these fishermen. My question to the minister, will he immediately instruct the Loan Board to fix this problem and apologize to Dixon's Shipyard or Dixon's Marine Group, which employs many of the minister's neighbors, for damaging their stellar reputation?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. It's an interesting question. We haven't improved the loan board and fishermen's access to it. I'm very confident in the staff that we have a great program. But there's also a little bit of history here, Mr. Speaker. Since we have taken this position, our government, the member opposite and his party has not defended owner-operator policy, which we have. We also put more protection around George's Bank, which we have. And we have stood up for EI in Atlantic Canada, and we went to Ottawa in February, and that member opposite, Mr. Speaker, was silent. Thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Throughout the province, we have an unemployment rate of 9.5%, but of course, that is masking the trouble outside of Metro. With most other areas being double-digit unemployment, then we have that weighted average of Metro bringing down the reality of the numbers. In Cape Breton, we are struggling with a rate, as we know, of 18.6%. To make matters worse, the government is projecting even fewer people working in the province in the coming year. A drop of employment of 1,100 people for 2013, Mr. Speaker. This is not good news for Nova Scotia, and given the tough circumstances in Cape Breton already, it is certainly not good news for our island. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism tell Cape Bretoners how many of the 1,100 projected job losses in 2013 will disappear from Cape Breton?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I can stand in my place and say that if it hadn't have been for this government, 1,400 direct and indirect jobs would have disappeared from Cape Breton Island. If this government hadn't stepped in, Mr. Speaker, and worked with Port Hawkesbury New Page for new ownership, and now one of the most productive mills in North America, if not in the world, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government did this much to the contrary of the opposition party, Mr. Speaker.
Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, since this government took office, there has been a spike in unemployment for Cape Bretoners to the tune of 10%. This makes 11,000 unemployed islanders at last count, Mr. Speaker, 11,000 unemployed. Those 11,000 people are certainly not better off under this premier, under this government. And if it's the government's own employment projections are to be believed, there are more job losses on the horizon for the island, Mr. Speaker, and the island's economy. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Economic and Rural Development explain why his government is content with its record of 11,000 unemployed Cape Bretoners?
Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we are not content with is the loss of federal jobs on Cape Breton Island, Mr. Speaker. We're not content with the fact that Canada Post is closing, Mr. Speaker. We're not content with Veterans Affairs, Mr. Speaker, that they're closing their office with contact centres. The list goes on and on. What we are doing, Mr. Speaker, in Cape Breton Island, we are investing in businesses on Cape Breton Island. While we are creating jobs in Cape Breton, the federal government is eliminating jobs.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The CBRM and Council have recently proposed a sound 5-year capital plan to address infrastructural concerns, put tradespeople back to work, and bridge the gap to possibly improving economic conditions. And, Mr. Speaker, as you know, things can't get much worse on the island. If the Minister of ERDT is truly committed to helping Cape Breton, will he signal his support by identifying the CBRM capital plan as a provincial priority, and will he earmark funds for the capital plan in this fiscal year?
Honourable the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we've shown our commitment not only to Cape Breton, but to all Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you know, maybe the opposition will stand side by side with this government and endorse the Maritime Link, Mr. Speaker. A huge employment effort in Cape Breton now, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we've made investments in IIBG for a feasibility study on future work in Cape Breton. Mr. Speaker, we've invested millions of dollars in the dredging of Sydney Harbour. Millions of dollars, Mr. Speaker. Not to mention all those other small and medium-sized businesses throughout all of Cape Breton, from Bill Did It to Cole Paul to a whole list of things, Mr. Speaker. We've shown our commitment, Mr. Speaker, and it's unfortunate that the Liberal Party is not standing alongside of us.
The Honourable Member for Preston.
Mr. Speaker, the GDP in 2012 for the province was 0.2%. The economy is a standstill, and rural Nova Scotia is in a recession. Business confidence has dropped. Consumer confidence has dropped. Government estimates that the provincial employment will drop by 1,100 jobs in 2013. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Economic and Rural Development tell the residents of Preston how many of the expected 1,100 job losses will be in Preston?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, I will say this, is that when Irving Shipbuilding approached us, and they talked about the 11,500 jobs that were going to be created at the peak off the Irving Shipbuilding. One of the things that this government emphasized to Irving Shipbuilding, and you know what? It's unfortunate that all members of the House will not understand this, but we made sure, Mr. Speaker, that there was going to be a strong diversity component of that employment, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Irving Shipyard has committed to ensuring that diversity is a pillar of their go-for-it motion when it comes to those 11,500 jobs.
The Honourable Member for Preston on his first supplementary.
Our rural economy is already in recession. The government is predicting a drop of employment of 1,100 people in 2013. A large amount of people in the Preston riding rely on the construction industry for employment. Housing starts are down, one of the leading indicators of economic growth, and are being forecast to drop by 11.1% in 2013, and again, a drop of 5% in 2014. This forecast drop in housing...
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers has expired. I will now call the government House Leader to call business.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, could you please call private members' public bills for second reading?
Private member public bills for second reading. The Honourable the Deputy Premier.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Premier, I'd like to... Call Bill number 71, the House of Assembly Act.
Bill number 71, the House of Assembly Act. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I now move that Bill 71 now be read for a second time.
If I am to recognize the Honourable Minister, it will be a closed debate on Bill number 7.